about pain and suffering, but about relationship. So if you're there, we'll be in the ninth verse of chapter 4. And Solomon writes this, he says, "Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. For if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when there is not another to lift him up. Furthermore, if two lie down together, they keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? And if one can overpower him who is alone, two can resist him. A cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart." The Jews have a practice called Shiva, or Shiva, depending on who you talk to. And it's a practice for when someone dies. When someone dies, they sit Shiva. And what it is the family will gather together in one home, and they will sit there, if possible, the home of the deceased. If that's not big enough, they will choose somewhere else. But they sit together. And the word Shiva is the word, the Hebrew word for seven. And that determines, that's the length of time that traditionally is set, when the family will come together and they won't do anything but sit for 7 days. Now, if you happen to go visit a Jewish family that is sitting Shiva, one of the things that you will notice, you'll walk in, and if there's mirrors, especially ones that are out in the living area, they'll be covered in black. They will be draped with something black, and you'll notice that the cushions on the couches and chairs, if at all possible, will be removed, and the family will be sitting low. Or they might have low-cut stools that sit low as they are sitting and mourning. But the thing is they do it together. And beyond that, it becomes a community thing where the whole community will just come and sit. And if you come to a family that's sitting Shiva, you will typically bring food. Because a family sitting Shiva isn't supposed to cook. They're not supposed to prepare any food for 7 days. And so traditionally you'll bring food, but occasionally food isn't appropriate, and so you'll bring another gift. But the one thing they don't bring is flowers. Because flowers die. So you don't bring flowers. You bring books, you bring other things that will encourage and strengthen, but you focus on the one who is deceased. You know, it's coming in community. And the other thing is if you come to somebody who's sitting Shiva and you walk into the house, you say nothing. You simply walk in, you find a seat, and you sit. And you might come for a visit of an extended period of time, and you might just sit, and nothing might ever be said. I think that's why in the beginning of the book of Job, we see Job's friends, they come and they sit with him for 7 days and nothing is said. Now, if you come in and you sit down and the family that's sitting Shiva, somebody begins to speak to you, you have the freedom to speak. But you don't speak first, you wait until they break the silence. You see, it's done in community. And here's what I want you to know. First of all, we were not meant to suffer. That is part of the curse. But after the curse, I can tell you this, we were not meant to go through suffering alone. We were not meant to go through suffering alone. And so that being the case, I want us to look at Solomon's advice this morning. And the first thing he says is, he says that we need community. Three different times, Solomon identifies for us the necessity of community. He says that if there are two people, they can work together and they'll get more done. You know, as we go through life, we need somebody. We need other people with us that we are just in life together with and that we are serving alongside of. Whether it's one person that is just there for us, a spouse. You know, that's one of the great things about marriages is that is the purpose and that is the intent, is that two people can work together for common good and for common purposes. But beyond that, we all need other people, that there are two people or even a group of people, but we need community. And Solomon says part of the reason that we need that is because we can just do a whole lot more. we can do a whole lot more together. But then he also says, he says it's not just somebody to work with, but he says it's somebody to sleep with. You know, we don't see the necessity of this quite the same. I mean, you can walk into any house that any of us live in, and on the wall, in one of the rooms in the house, there is this little box. And you can walk up to that little box, and it's either got a slide or a dial or maybe some buttons to push. And you can adjust that so that the temperature is just where you want it. And if that's not enough, we have lots of blankets. You know, most of us can get many blankets. And so if you go to bed at night and you're cold, you just pile on the blanket, you turn up the thermostat a little bit, and you stay warm. But when Solomon was writing this, this wasn't the case. You might have one blanket or maybe two. And so on cold nights, you'd start the fire, but some of you are old enough to remember living in a house where you heated your home with a fireplace, and somewhere around 4 o'clock in the morning, that fire started to be just a few embers in the bottom, and things started to cool off. And this was in a home with maybe some insulation in the walls and some windows to kind of keep things out, but you lived back when Solomon was writing, and you didn't even have some of those protections. And so somebody to be with to keep warm. Somebody to be warm. And we don't think about it, but there are times when you just need somebody. You need somebody that you can be deeply intimate with. Somebody that you can share the deepest parts of life, the deepest pains, the deepest hurts, those things that you don't want other people to know about. But you need somebody. You need somebody who's walking so close beside you that on those cold nights, on those dark days, in those times when life just doesn't make sense, you need somebody that you are deeply intimate with, that they won't let you be quiet. They know. And they're going to ask, and they're not going to take nothing for an answer. They're going to keep asking the question, what's going on? What do you need? And it's like somebody that you can lie down beside. And then Solomon says, sometimes you need somebody to fight with. Not somebody to fight against, but somebody to fight with. Somebody to come alongside of you and fight beside you. Somebody that will turn their back to yours and watch one direction while you watch the other. Somebody who's there to face the battles of life with you. Because don't you know, haven't you experienced that sometimes in life you're just at a place where you can't fight by yourself? Where the battles of life are too great? Where the struggles are too insurmountable? When the circumstances just seem beyond your control, and you need somebody. Somebody who can fight beside you. Somebody who's on your side and has your back. You know, sometimes we need somebody. We need a community. But Solomon says it's not just that we need a community, but he gives us some great instructions here, because he doesn't just talk about finding community when you need it. You see, the time for community is before you need it. You know, it's kind of like insurance. When is the time to buy insurance? Before you need it. You know, most insurance companies aren't going to cover you if you buy insurance tomorrow for an accident yesterday. Community works the same way. The best time to get into community, the best time to begin to build relationship, the best time is, well, Solomon says it's a matter of timing. He says, if someone falls, if you're walking along and you fall down, he says, there's somebody there. What does that imply? Well, it implies that they were walking right beside you. Or at least they were walking just in front of you or just behind you. They were walking in close enough proximity that when you fell, they were there to give you a hand. When we go through life, we fall down. As one of my kids used to celebrate, oh, they fall down, go boom. And then somebody was there. You know, they were watching football. They watch football just for somebody to fall down and go boom. I raised some pretty strange kids. It's all their mom's fault. I'm a perfectly normal person. It all And if you buy that, I've got a bridge in Arizona that goes to Hawaii that I'm willing to sell. Low price. But Solomon says that that the time for community is before you need it. If somebody falls, they're there beside you. He says that if you're cold, they're there. You know, Solomon is writing and he says, you know, if you go to lie down and you're cold, you need somebody there to keep you warm, to stay warm with you. And he's talking about the fact that there is this relationship between these two people that's already been there, that's already established. And so on this cold night, when you lay down, they're there already. Or he says, if you go into a fight or if you go into a battle, he doesn't say you just go out and look for somebody when you get ready to pick a fight. He doesn't say when you get ready for a battle, you go out and you just find the next person that might walk along with you. He says, no. No, you need somebody who's been there, somebody whose friendship is tried and it's true, somebody who you know and you trust. I think of Jonathan and his armor bearer. You know, here's Jonathan. There's this great battle raging, and Saul has, his army is kind of, well, they're not doing so well. And they're kind of hiding a little bit. And suddenly Jonathan sees this detachment of Philistines, and they're up high protecting a very strategic place, and Jonathan looks at his armor bearer and he says, you know what? Here's what we're going to do. I trust that God's going to give us this battle, but we're going to, if they call to us one way, we're going to go up to them and God will give them into our hand. If they say something else, we'll just stay here and God will give them into our hand. God's going to win this victory. But and his armor bearer simply looked at him, and because of the experience, because of the time that these two men had spent together, because of the times that they had been in battle before, the armor bearer simply looked at Jonathan and said, you're on your own. No, he said, come on, let's go. I'm right beside you. We're going to do this together. We're going to fight this battle together. You and me. This is what Solomon is talking about. He says, when we go into battle, and maybe that's a real battle that Solomon was writing about, a real war that was going to be waged, or maybe he was simply talking about the figurative battles that we all face, the battles with health, the battles with finances. You know, living in an agrarian society, you depended a lot on things that were out of your control, and maybe just the battle with one year to the next, wondering how the crops were going to be or how the sheep were going to do. We don't know, but Solomon says if you go into battle, you need somebody to fight there with you. And the thing is in each case, all three of these cases, what Solomon says is they were there beforehand. He didn't just go find somebody. He says that there is a relationship. A time for community is before you need it. You see, and we need people before we need them. We need community before we have the need. You see, that way we have somebody there that can see when we've fallen. You know, that sometimes our greatest need is for somebody who just sees the need and does something about it. We need somebody who is standing there beside us and can say, you know what, I see something is wrong. I can tell by your body language. I can tell by the sound of your voice. I can tell by the fact that, well, you haven't talked to me in like 20 minutes. You know, I can see that something is wrong. I sense that something isn't right. And they're there, and they see when you've fallen. And they're willing to give you a hand up. But that only happens in a relationship that has been developed over time. That only happens in community that is real and authentic, that has been experienced together. Not only do we need somebody that's there when we need them, we need somebody who's always going to be there. We need somebody whose friendship and whose community has been tested long enough that we know that if something goes wrong, we don't have to ask, will you? But how soon can you? We need to be able to ask the question, how soon can you be here? How much can you give? How much can you help? Not will you, but how much? Because we know that they will be there through thick and thin. We know that they will be there in the tough times and in the good times, because we've experienced life in the past. And we need to have somebody that we know is willing to go the distance. Somebody who's going to be there by our side, no matter how long it takes, no matter how far we have to go, no matter how high the mountain is that we have to climb before we get to the summit. We need somebody that we know that is going to fight with us when we can't fight for ourselves, and somebody who isn't going to give up on us in the midst of the battle. But that only happens, we only know that when we've been in community and we've done it for long periods of time. And even though Solomon doesn't say it, I would say that we also need multiple people. It's great if you've got one person. If you've got one person that's a friend like this, and that's great. But we really need multiple people who fit into these categories, who are people that are going to be there for us. Because don't you know, sometimes we face trials at the same time as someone else. And we need somebody still. And then Solomon says this. He says, a cord of three strands. A cord of three strands. And the only thing that we can understand that Solomon is talking about is the fact that these relationships are built around God. He never really gives an indication where the third strand comes from. And so we're left trying to figure this out. But as I read the book of Ecclesiastes, as I've studied the book of Ecclesiastes, and I've studied this passage, I say that it's most likely he's talking about God. We need to include God as that third strand. Maybe he's the first strand and the others are secondary, but however you look at it, God has to be in the picture. That God has to be part of this community. It's great to have friends who aren't followers of Christ, but we need people in our lives as Christ followers who are also Christ followers, who are going to be there. Because only they can bring God into the situation. Only they can bring the power of the Holy Spirit to work when we need Him the most. And then Solomon gives us one more thing. He tells us that we need community, that we need it before we need it, and then he says these are the benefits of community. These are the benefits. These are the things that you will gain. These are the things that you really need. When you face pain and suffering, he says, let me tell you. Let me tell you about the benefit of the community. This is what he's getting to. And he paints this picture. He paints this picture of the blessings of living in community. It is the benefit of somebody there to work alongside of, so that you get more done than you do on your own. There is something about the profit of two people. There's something about the added benefit, where 1 + 1 = 2, yes. But when we put one person and one person together, it doesn't equal the work of two, it equals the work of multiple. It's exponentially greater than addition. And Solomon says that's a blessing that we can do things together. He says it's a blessing to know that somebody's got your back. It's a blessing to know that somebody's there to pick you up. It's a blessing to just have somebody together. It's just like the community of a Jewish family sitting Shiva. It's just the fact that you know that you can come and you can mourn and somebody will come alongside of you. And they'll walk through it with you. They don't have to say anything. They don't have to do anything but be there. You see, they just sit and wait. They wait. They're there for you. It's about you. And sometimes we just need people who will come alongside of us, and we know that they're there to stand beside us, to stand and help us to make through it. Walter Kaiser, in his book Coping with Change, dealing with Ecclesiastes, he says, society, not the solitary life of a hermit or the like, and perhaps even marriage, but not the single life of celibacy, are to be preferred. For in such intimacy and in the shared life, there are resources made available. Assistance in verse 10, comfort in verse 11, and the defense of one another in verse 12. You see, we live in a society that more and more is pushing us to be hermits, to live in isolated boxes with our interaction right here. In a few words. But that's not what we're looking for. That's not what we need. What we need is real intimate relationships, where we are interacting and we are rubbing shoulders and we have some skin in the game of somebody else's life. Because it's then and only then, it's only when we begin to live these relationships that Solomon is writing about in Ecclesiastes that we can get to what Paul writes about. In Romans chapter 12, Paul gives us this great statement about relationship. And because of time, I'm not going to read it all. I would encourage you to read chapter 12, verses 4 through 16 later. But I just want to read chapter 12, verses 9 through 6 or 15. Paul says, "Let your love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor. Not lagging behind in diligent, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Rejoicing in hope, persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer, and contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality." You see, right there, if you just read those verses, you're talking about community. The things that Paul are talking about are things that are done in community for one another. And then he goes on, he says, "Bless those who persecute you, and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice, and weep with those who weep." And when we go through pain and suffering, don't you know we need somebody that will come alongside us and they will weep when we weep. They are there for us to cry on their shoulders. They're the ones who are going to hand us the box of Kleenex and says, "You cry as long as you need, and then we'll work through this together." They'll say, "We don't care how long it takes, how rough the road is. We're going to weep with you because you're weeping. We're going to experience your pain. We may not have been through it, but we're going to empathize with you because we're going through it with you now." Don't you know that we need people like that? And we cannot deal with pain and suffering on our own. We were not created for that. We were created for community. I want to share this perception by Daniel Fredericks. He says, "Those who consider themselves righteous but have never hated life have not taken God's sovereign justice, have not taken seriously God's sovereign justice, including the curse. How vapid a worldview it would be if any wisdom culture in any age of any society did not hate the human condition experienced by both the wearied individual and the beleaguered humanity as a whole." In other words, he's saying, you know what? We don't need cancer, and it's okay to hate cancer, and it's okay to hate the things that cancer does. It's okay to hate the broken relationships of divorce. It's okay to hate those things that the curse has brought. We should hate them, yes. But he goes on, he says, "How insensitive to reality or intentionally oblivious to a distressed world can we be if in our crystal cathedrals we smile and count our blessings only publicly? And perhaps worse, how dishonest can we continue to be when we ask how things are going and we respond invariably, fine? We have been brainwashed by the heresy of fineness. We can even, as believers, we live lives punctuated by cursedness. We are perpetually morbid. Are we perpetually morbid then? No, nor are we to be perpetually giddy with delight. Koheleth prescribes a wisdom that is balanced. We have to live life together, and we have to be willing to say to one another, no, life isn't all right. No, life isn't good. Will you walk with me through the pain? We can't just come in and count our blessings. We have to be willing to acknowledge our pains. You see, we need friends. We need community. We are responsible for being honest in times of need and not always for waiting for others to understand our hour of need, nor are we to wait for them to tell us about theirs. I'm reminded of the Lord of the Rings series by J.R.R. Tolkien. Frodo Baggins is on a quest to destroy this powerful ring, and the ring continually gains power over Frodo and continues to overpower him and drain him, because it was a burden that he was never meant to carry. It was a burden that he was not created for. And at one point his companion, Samwise Gamgee, says to Frodo, "Come, Mr. Frodo, I can't carry it for you, but I can carry you." You see, that's what Solomon is saying as he writes. He says, if one falls down, there's somebody else to pick him up. I can't do it for you, but I can help you up. I can't fight the battle for you, but I can fight alongside of you. I can't carry your burden, but I can carry you. And finally, a quote from the great theologian Woody from the movie Toy Story. After he's tried to lose another toy and then discovered his need for the same toy, he says the great line, "You've got a friend in me. You've got a friend in me." You see, this is what we need. We need somebody to come alongside of us and say, "You've got a friend in me." And we all need friends. And the greatest of those friends is the third friend in Solomon's cord of three strands. It's God the Father. God the Father who sent His Son to pay the price for us. When we were sinners and we were down and we couldn't do anything about it, God stuck down His hand and He offered us a way up. He says, "You've fallen and I will help you stand up." He says, "You've got battles to fight that you can't fight on your own with sin and temptation. Here is my Spirit to give you assistance and help you fight the battles." Do you know this God who loves you that much? Is He a friend to you? Because it's only to His friends that He offers a hand up. It's only to His friends that He's there to fight beside you. And we get there through the blood of Jesus Christ. This morning we're going to sing a hymn of invitation, and the invitation is for you to come and to experience the blood of Christ so you can begin this relationship of one who sticks closer than a friend, of the greatest friend of all. And as the song we're about to sing says, "Lord, Lord, I need You." Yes, we need friends, but the first friend we need is the Lord. If you don't know Him this morning, won't you come as we stand together? If you do and you just need somebody to be a friend, we'd love to pray with you. We'd love to encourage you and just help you along that way. So if you need something, won't you come as we stand together?